Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
A lot of ordinary people are suffering, just like Jesus, Joseph and Mary were ordinary people who suffered under the empire and under the genocide rule of a king, and they had to flee. And the same thing is happening today.
In Egypt, under the shadow of ancient churches and desert skies, global faith leaders gathered for the World Council of Churches' 6th World Conference on Faith and Order. It was marking 1,700 years of the Nicene Creed, an historic statement of Christian belief that has shaped churches around the world. Amid these global conversations, a new voice emerged, the Pacifica Creed, grounded in land, ocean, ancestors, and the relational life of our communities. It reimagines faith in a way that speaks to our region today. Joining us to talk about this groundbreaking work is Reverend Professor Upolu Lumavai, the Manufalau and Professor of Theology and Ethics at the Pacifica Communities University. He helped bring the Pacifica Creed to life.
The Pacifica Creed is a reinvention and a reimagining of the Nicene Creed. So it was produced by the Pacific region, and I presented that creed to the regional meetings, as well as the circulated the creed amongst all the participants of the conference in Egypt. So the creed spoke about, and it speaks about, the Pacific identity in the light of God's salvation and purpose for us, including the importance of land and ocean and Pacific cultures and identities, all woven into the creed. And when we recited the creed in Egypt, it was so emotional because it really touches the soul, and it really represents our cultures and how faith can really empower people if it's woven into our cultural values and principles as well. So it was a great conference.
Wow. Is there any part of the Nicene Creed, the Pacifica Creed, that is close to you that had to be in it?
There is a whole of life, but it's definitely the whole of life is in the Creed. But also in the Creed there's many other things, like, you know, my own philosophy and my own theology, it's about relationality. It's about relationships. So everything in the Creed was designed around the importance of God's relationship with us and our relationship with the sacred household, which we call in the Creed the sacred household, human, non-human, extended families and ecology. We've also used multiple names from different countries of the Pacific, like, for example, from BNG, we use Tambu Baba for God. And we use phrases such as Satiko Nakalo from Fiji. We started the Greek by saying Tulo Laba. And then we moved to acknowledging God, the whole of life, the source of aloha and love and eternal creator. And then it stems from there. And then it went to the son, you know, born of the Virgin Mary. And all of that just fused the notion of justice inside and ecological justice inside the Greek. And then we also looked at, Jesus that was born and crucified by an empire at the time. But it was really, on the third day he rose like the great shell. The tomb broke open as foretold by our sacred stories. In solidarity with the Pacific household. So it was so emotional hearing and seeing, the sun and spirit really resonates with everyday life of the Pacific people. It's so empowering. We also use the Maori word Wairua, Wairua Tapu, for Holy Spirit. Going back to ancestors, the relational dynamics and alive in Avanua, the Holy Spirit. We brought in our dances and our chants as well into the whole creed. It was nice. And now what the process we have now is that the creed will be endorsed by the Pacific Conference of Churches that will be meeting in Fiji in 2027. And once this is endorsed, that it will become the creed of the Pacific.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
On Pacific Soul today, our guest once again is the incredibly fascinating Reverend Dr. Opololuma Vai, who's the principal and professor in theology and ethics at the Pacific Communities University in Suva, Fiji. And we're talking about a recent trip that he made to Egypt for the Faith and Order Conference with the World Conference of Churches. Apollo, you found yourself in the Middle East at a time where there is incredible suffering in Gaza, and Jesus' own homeland is in many parts in ruins. I'm sure you've said and spoken quite publicly just how much this weighed on you and also on many people at the conference, and where you feel responsibility is for churches to do more than speak about this injustice. Can you share a little bit about what you might have been thinking about while you were in Egypt?
Thank you for the question. I think that when I was in Egypt, the significance of understanding, just imagining what happened in Egypt, and we are reading now the story of the birth of Jesus, and in particular the Matthew's version, where the Holy Family was redirected to Egypt to save the little baby. And we've sort of reflected on this land where Jesus and Joseph and Mary were migrants in Egypt. The church in Egypt was established by St. Mark, and that is the church that hosted the Coptic church, the Orthodox Coptic church that hosted. And they always believe that this is the land that was blessed by Jesus and the Holy Family when they were migrants there. At the time where there was a genocide in Judah at the moment, at that time, and in Jerusalem, thinking of this time and what is happening in Gaza and Israel, it's sort of repeats Matthew's story, where people are seeking refuge elsewhere because of the genocides, because of the killings, whether it's this killing is done by Israel or this killing is run by Hamas. That is not the point. The point is that a lot of ordinary people are suffering, just like Jesus and Joseph and Mary were ordinary people who suffered under the empire and under the genocide rule of a king, and they had to flee. And the same thing is happening today with many people who are struggling with food and water. They are crying out for life, whether it's in Israel or in Gaza. And it's something that the church needs to look at. It was very strong in Egypt, the call for Israel, for justice, and also the call to help out Gaza and those who are vulnerable, the women and the children. It wasn't just a call for one side to be acknowledged. It was a call for the church to stand with the vulnerable, with the victims of wars and genocides. And I think being there in Egypt and just feeling the sacredness of the land where Joseph and Mary and Jesus were diverted to and being a migrant in Egypt just to flee from persecution and genocide. You can feel what's happening today to our brothers and sisters in the Middle East. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. As a person of faith, you know, you sort of witness injustice in many different forms. So as a community and as a leader, what do you hold on to stay strong in faith in the face of this global injustice and violence?
Under the Hall of Life vision that I promote, the sense of hope that is in God and spirituality, our notion of faith and spirituality, which is foundational to our understanding of God. That's first and foremost. But our faith and spirituality is also the very things, that were sidelined and eliminated by a secularized development narrative that we have today in the world today. It was seen as, these two were seen as a threat to the development narrative because of the removal of spirituality from education, from economic development, from policies, from gender, and from many public policies that we see today. Spirituality is often seen as something that will ruin or destroy, and something that is not sustainable because it cannot be measured. So in fact, I was just speaking about your, you know, the name of your program, Pacific Soul. It's exactly what we are doing here. We're removing the soul of development by removing God and spirituality. Just in Honiara, this year in September, during the Pacific Forum Leaders Meeting, I was at my institution together with the Solomon Islands National University. We launched what we call the Development with a Soul. And we push for a thought leaders network that will reimagine development where spirituality is at the center of development. And we call it Development with a Soul. And it's important that for me as a leader and as a, you know, as a leader of also a regional university, this is the core of who we are. And we cannot in any way remove this from our public policies and development. And that's what we mean by the whole of life. We need to bring in the other part, the other missing part, which is spirituality, into the picture. And that's what we are doing now with regional organizations such as PIFS, as SPC and UNDP, World Bank, and others. We're helping them on how to incorporate, again, spirituality into this public policies, and we are also running the trainings as well. The second thing that gives me hope is education. And this is the very important as for me as a church leader and also as a regional leader. Education is key to the future, and education is key to changing it, knowing very well that education has also been used against ordinary people, against indigenous people, because it was so structured around the Western education conventional system. What we are doing is that we are reimagining education from a community-based level, going back to learn from our elders, going back to the values and principles of our communities, going back to our faith and spiritualities. That is so central. And the last one that I think, you know, really drives my whole life, not only my thinking, my publications, my vision of the future, and the church, is about relationships. It's about people. It's about collective actions. Everything about the Pacific is about relationships, about families, about people. We miss this. We miss the whole point. Normally, policies come second, or frameworks come second, structures come second, money comes second, you know, all of this, budget comes second. Relationships always first. That's why it's hard for policy makers to deal with how we think and how we do things in the Pacific, because we don't do things in the way they do things, where budget has to be the first, where policy has to be the first. Us, this, the relationship has to be the first. And we have to navigate those relationships in order for the budget to come in order for policies to come in, because that is so foundational to what we call life or whole of life. We eliminate relationships, and then we eliminate the whole purpose, the sense of soul that we are talking about. So these are the three things that drives me as a leader: God and spirituality, education, and relationships.
You're a very exceptional leader, Apollo. Thank you so much. And when you have something like this, or these three areas that you work so hard at, I'm sure it's not so easy to get down in the dumps and stay there, because you're taking action every day, and everyone who works with you at the Communities University is working on those three pillars as well. So, you know, there's a lot of hope that comes from actually putting the work in and showing up and knowing that you're working towards improving a situation. But you put together a Christmas message for the Pacific community at the end of the year, and I don't want to rush you because I know you've still got a few weeks. But was there a message that you might like to share with anyone?
Yes, I'm almost sorry, but try to find a time to complete my my Christmas message. Normally, a lot of people around the world they're waiting for the Christmas message. So I always make sure that I deliver a good quality Christmas message. So the Christmas message for me this year and for the world. Now I'm sharing it with you. I haven't shared it with any of my community. I shared them some extracts of it, but it's all about Christmas for me. It's the embodiment of God's love in others. Whether this other is a person or a community or the Vanua or the marginalized, you know, this is the core message of the Emmanuel. God is with us. So when I say, you know, God is with us, it's not just about God with us. It's about embodiment. It's about the embodiment of love, of aloha, of loma. It is a reminder that God is not the God of Western philosophers, who often define God beyond human relationships. It is a reminder that God is one who is always with us. So I remember here the, you know, the Methodist core axiom by John Wesley, which says, and I quote, "The best thing is that God is with us." But the catch, really, is our part to play in this embodiment business. How do we embody God's grace in a world that is so broken from political, from economic and social injustice, with genocide such as the one instigated by, you know, King Herod? We see the wars today. We see the suffering of many people. So Christmas is really that reminder of the embodiment of love. There is a shift, and the reason why I'm saying this is that I want to shift from the missional focus that we always talk about. When we talk about mission, there's a sense of sending people out to convert or to evangelize. I want to shift that to the idea of the Emmanuel idea, to the embodiment idea. It's not just sending people to evangelize, but we really have to embody the woundedness of other people. You know, we have to embody the pain, the vulnerability of other people that we work with. We don't just go and evangelize. We don't just go and convert them. That is the model that was there in hundreds and hundreds of decades ago. What I see in this Emmanuel is the sense of embodying of love in those who are suffering in the wounded world, and embodying grace, embodying love. It's about sharing, it's about caring, about walking with others. It's about finding the star of salvation in others who are wounded. So while we try to find the star of Jesus, you know, everywhere, why don't we find the star, that star in wounded people and suffering people, those who are marginalized? Because God walks with them. God is born in them, these wounded people. If you miss the wounded people, you miss the star. If you miss the marginalized people, you miss the star. Probably the star is on them. It's not on somewhere else. It's on those, it's on the victims of war. You know, it's on the victims of the genocides. It's on those who are migrants like Jesus, who escaped to Egypt. So, you know, in Samoa and Fiji and other parts of the world, we often treat Christmas as a time to celebrate relationships, you know, gatherings. But I would like to push a little bit further, say to also treat this time to really be with those who are suffering and embody the wounds of those who need us the most this time.
A big thank you to Reverend Professor Apollo Lumavai, the Manu Falau and Professor of Theology and Ethics at the Pasifika Communities University in Fiji. You've been listening to Pacific Soul with me, Melissa Makin. You can catch this episode anytime on the ABC Pacific website. This episode was produced on Yagara and Turrbal Country.